Okay, we're going to talk today about superstition and divination, those types of things, and some of the weirder things that we really don't understand much about. We're going to do as much as we can. This is not going to be an exhaustive shir. It's more going to be a shir that explains the practices and maybe gives us a little bit of an understanding of what we have to do. It says in Perek Yutes Pasuk Chavav, Lo Sochlu Al Hadam. The Gemara explains this in about four or five different ways. The Medrash has about 10 different explanations, is what this means. The literal translation is, do not eat upon the blood, which is usually translated the simplest way in Sanhedrin, says, don't eat kudshim before the blood is sprinkled on the Mizbeach. You cannot eat the kudshim, you're supposed to eat the chatos, the asham, or the shlamim, depending on what you're dealing with, until the blood is sprinkled. Lo sinachashu, velo seoninu. Do not practice superstition, nichush, and don't get involved in divination, which is ma'onin. So the Gemara, again, since it brings so many different explanations, you'd think that all of them are dealing with straight out halacha. But the Sforno says all three of these are ways to tell the truth, tell the future in a way of tuma. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to be holy, wants them to do things that are in the right way, not in a bad way, in Kiddusha. And this, these three, lo sochel adam, lo sinachashu, lo seonenu, are all the exact opposite of that. The Baal HaTurim and the Chizkuni say this is talking about someone who murdered another person. He used them as a human sacrifice, made an actual human sacrifice, and then broke bread over the murdered man's body. They believe that that would stop all of the evil coming from that body. No one would come after them after that. So when you murdered somebody or used them as a human sacrifice, the family would no longer be angry if you break bread over that person's body. It would take away revenge. That's how the Baal HaTurim and the Chizkuni put it. If you do this, they say, aside from being over on murder, obviously because you just killed somebody, you're also over on lo sochel al adam, for eating the meat after blood. It won't really matter because you're chayv misa for murder anyway. But I guess if there were no edim or anything like that, well, even so, you're going to be potter. But the whatever you do after that is going to be there. And that was called Darchei Amori. The Rashbam adds there were people that did this for magic purposes, in order to gain in magic, similar to people who take slivers off of crosses in order to use for good luck. There are people that do that. These people would go ahead and do this sort of thing as well. They would eat over the grave of that animal. The Radak says the blood of a slaughtered animal was put inside a bowl for occult purposes, and then a ritual meal would be eaten over it. And the way the Ramban explains it is, this allowed Shadim to come near there. When you spilled blood into a pit and then ate by that pit, it's as if you're having a meal with the demons. You're having a meal where you're inviting over all the Shadim and all the demons to join you there, and then you would be granted Nevuah about the future. You'd be able to pick the minds of those Shadim that were coming there. This happened. This actually happened in Shmuel Aleph Perek Yudalit. When Shmuel and Avi fought the war, this is when Yehonasan went ahead. I forgot, we're not girls. So, okay, there's, again, Shmuel Aleph is a Navi. It's a Navi. And in Shmuel Aleph, Shaul HaMelech goes and fights against quite a few nations, this time the Plishtim. When they were fighting against the Plishtim and worried about what the Plishtim were doing, Yehonasan ben Shaul went out and fought against the Plishtim on his own. He went out with his guy, right, and Furu was his name, and they went out together and they went up to the camp and they had this whole divination thing where he said, if they come up to us and they ask us to come to them, right, then we should go and fight them, and if not, then we're going to run away. So Yehonasan went to the camp, went up to the camp itself, right, and went through, destroyed everyone. Shaul HaMelech saw what was happening from the other mountain, sent his army over, realizing that Yehonasan had done something here. They all fought against his army. He made the promise that nobody should eat anything from the fields. There was honey in the fields, the Yaros Devash, in which they were trying to eat from it, and Shaul HaMelech made them promise no one is allowed to eat. And at the end of the day, they weren't sure what was happening. It says they were eating upon the blood. They were eating upon the blood. Simply, that would mean, Rashi says, they were eating before the Shechita was even finished. Before they could even finish shechting the animals, they were so starving, they grabbed blood from the animals and ate the blood. That's how disgusting it was. But there's more to it than just that. There's way more to it than just that. The Ramban says, and the way he understands it is that when they finished the war, they wanted to know what was going to be in the future, what was going to be in the future. So what they did is they spilled blood, ate bread on top of it to ask the Shadim what was going to be with the Plishim in the future, how that was going to happen. The Netziv says these were all practices the Kananim used to find out about rain. Remember, Eretz Yisrael was a land that did not have enough water sources to be able to have regular people there. So in order to find out when it was going to rain, they would do anything they could of the occult to make sure they knew exactly what was going to happen. Sometimes that meant eating meat over a pit that was filled with blood so they could speak to the occult practices that were there, the demons that were there, that would tell them what they want to know. And that's Nichush and Ma'onin as well. All of these things had to do with, says the Netziv, finding out when it was going to rain. That's all the explanations of Lo Soch Lo Adam, what it means to eat with the blood, and it's basically occult practices with demonic possessions, etc., and those types of things. The word Nichush, says Ibn Ezra, Lo Sinachashu means testing. We see it by Lavan. Nachashti, Nichashti, by Yvorcheni Hashem Bigalachi. He said about Yaakov, I did my testing, and I realized Hashem has blessed me because of you, said Lavan. I realized it's all because of you. So the word Nichush means to test. This can be done with anything, says Ibn Ezra. It can be done with pictures, it can be done with sticks, it could be done with movements of certain objects, it can be done with days, it can be done with hours. Rashi says that Nichush was done with black cats, weasels, birds, and other animals. I saw bread fall from the mouth of a dog today. Therefore, I think this is going to happen. I'm walking on the path, and a deer crossed on the path. Therefore, I'm not going there anymore. I'm walking back. Anything that has nothing to do with anything. You see something happen, you decide to do the other thing, anything like that. Talmud Yonasa says all of this was made up by the non-Jews. This is not a Jewish practice. None of this is Jewish practice because it didn't make any sense. One thing had nothing to do with the other. The Miam Loez goes on and he says there are other cases like this. You're going on a trip and you say, if this happens, then I'll go on the trip. And if not, nothing to do with any of this. Not, if it rains, then I'm not going on my trip. That's obvious. This is, you walk out of the house, if I see a cardinal, I'm not going on the trip. Which obviously has nothing to do with anything. Just because you saw a cardinal, you're not going to go on your trip. So too, you're going to eat a meal, something suddenly happens, you decide, forget it, I'm not going to do it. Something like that. Your sandwich falls to the ground, right? Or the bag you're carrying falls without any warning. You say, oh, that means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is warning me, I shouldn't be going in this path. All of that, says the Miam Loez, are omens. Omens that are called Nichush, and they're problematic. If you start doing things based on those omens, on those things that really mean nothing at all, that's a problem when it goes through. Other people did Nichush with tax collectors. They would say to a tax collector, don't come collecting from me on a Sunday. Don't come collecting from me on the first of the month. Don't come collecting from me on my birthday. That's bad mazel. I don't want to give you any money. Come back to me tomorrow. Come back to me the next day. Something like that. That's bad mazel. That's a simon of Nichush in which we say that is a problem right over there. If you say, shech that chicken, that sounds like a rooster. Because that chicken that sounds like a rooster, obviously roosters are the ones that crow. Chickens normally don't crow. But if the chicken makes the sound like a rooster and starts crowing, and you say, get rid of that rooster. If you're saying, because that's a freaky rooster and a freaky chicken, I just don't want it anywhere near me, that's okay. If you say, because that one, Hashem wants us to shuck that one, then that's weird. That could be involved in Nichush itself. And again, all because the omen has nothing to do with what you're actually doing here. There's nothing to do with what's actually happening. When someone takes it seriously, you run into real problems. Sefer HaChinuch Mitzvah number 249 says, it's forbidden to act or be concerned on the basis of superstitious bad omens. Anything like that can be a real problem. That's what it refers to over here. That's all Nichush, and we'll come back to it. Ma'oning is defined by Rashi as times and hours. Ona means, in that way, it calls a time, a period of time that goes through over there. Monday would be a great day to start working on that project. Not because Monday is the beginning of the week, because, oh, Monday, I looked and I saw Monday is going to be a good day for that, or Wednesday, something like that. 3 p.m. is a bad time to leave. Taking times and assuming that it's going to be there when it makes no sense at all, that's problematic. Rabbi Akiva's opinion, the Gemara Sanhedrin, that's the one that Rashi uses. Yeah.
Don't we have sources in the Torah that say Monday is a bad time to start like a new business?
Granted, you get very, very good. We're going to get to that. There are times where it's actually happening. But this is how Rashi puts it, and it's Rabbi Akiva's opinion in the Gemara Sanhedrin, Samachayim Abayz. The Rambam brings it as well, saying, I will only do something on a certain day or a certain time is problematic. Now, okay, we have to define that because obviously there are things that we do. So what is it? The Rambam in Yad HaZaka, Hilchos Avodah Zarah Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Ches says this means you are not allowed to look out for particularly good times astrologically or use illusions in order to get what you want. Anything like that is going to be problematic because you're doing it because you think this time is there. Again, when it doesn't make any sense. If it makes sense, it's a different story. The Ibn Ezra says another explanation. Ma'onein is a lashon of ona, that you're looking for a certain answer. As in onin akrav, they answer afterward. Ona is answer. You would think something to yourself and then listen for the answer being given. There were many people that used to do this with the Chafetz Chaim, where they would not have a question. They would have a question in their head but not ask it. And based on what the Chafetz Chaim would say, they answered their question. Now that's okay because you're dealing with a gadol in a very, very high form. But when people do that with just random conversations, waiting for that to happen and deciding what to do based on the words that come out of other people's mouths, thinking that that's a message from a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's what ma'onin is, says the Ibn Ezra, and you cannot do that. Others say, yeah. Yeah, we'll get to that also. The Tinoch reading a Pasuk is going to be an interesting one as well. Others say it means Anan. Anan are clouds. Here's what they would actually do. They'd look up, and like me, I look at clouds and I see like, I don't know, a dragon or like a cloud, and I see like certain things up there. They would look up at the clouds, and they would see certain signs for what they were going to do in the future. And they were actually ma'onein. They would have amazing imaginations. They would go all over the place. They'd stare at the clouds looking for what they're going to do. And it was defined by what they saw in the clouds themselves. In Sanhedrin, Samachayim Abayis, Rabbi Shimon's opinion is, this refers to seven types of something called Shechva Zera, which you don't need to translate, from seven different animals that they used to put over their eyes in order to do kishuf. That's what ma'onein was, which is disgusting. But that's what they did in order to do this type of kishuf. Targum Yonason says, by the way, Stephen King stole that in the Dark Tower series. Okay, not that I've ever read them, but he stole that idea and put it in the Dark Tower. It is actually in there. Targum Yonason says, I don't know if he did Sanhedrin. Targum Yonason says that this is telling us not to look at Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is the ayin, not to look at them. Because they do these magics, they get involved in this stuff, and they know how to do it, maybe we should do the same. No, Sanhedrin is allowed to do certain things because of what they have. You're not allowed to do stuff like that. Yalku Ruveni says, you shouldn't make an ayin for the Satan. Anybody's heard the Gemara that when you die, you see the sultan has eyes all over its body? It's in Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf Amud Beis. You've heard that there's eyes all over the body. That also was stolen by Madeline Engel in her second book. Everybody's read A Wrinkle in Time because you were a little kid at one point, right? Wind in the Door is her second book in which she describes a cherub, a kruv, as being a creature that has eyes all over its body and wings all over its body. That's stolen from the Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Chaf Amud Beis in a reference to the Malach HaMavas. Okay, whatever. They steal everything. I'm sorry?
So she learned Gemara?
She was a very religious Christian. I would not put it past her that she learned Gemara. Many of her books dealt with the Noach, etc. She was, she made horrible things about them, and I only read one of them before I stopped completely. But yes, she was a very religious Christian. Even within, you can see it in A Wrinkle in Time itself. There's a religious something behind it. There's something, like you can tell there's a God. She's very clear about it. Unfortunately, the wrong God, but she's very, very clear about how she goes through it. But that's the idea. Says the Alk Ruveni, based on the Shach, don't make an eye for the Satan. Every time a person sins, there's an eye that's given to the Satan where he's able to stare at you and know that you did something wrong. When a person dies, if he hasn't done tshuva, all those eyes are on the Satan himself. So when you see the Malach HaMavis at the end of your life, you see by the amount of eyes he has on him, the amount of sins you have. So when it says Los, which is freaky, when it says Los Onenu, that you don't do this Ma'onein, it means don't be a Ma'onein, don't give Einim, Einayim, to the Satan himself. That's what it refers to. Do tshuva, or make sure that you don't do such things. That's the idea of what Ma'onein is. Where Victor Miller says, on the other hand, certainly, we definitely say the month of Av is a bad time to go to court, right? Menachem Av, you don't go to court during the first 9 days of Av. We know you're not supposed to. Until Tu B'Av, you're really not supposed to go to court. We know that Adar is a time when you're supposed to go to court, right? Mishnechnas Adar Marvin B'Simcha, right? It seems, says Victor Miller, the real Isser is following what the nations do when it comes to this and when they do it. But if we have certain months, in which it does come out okay, and there are certain things that we believe in when it comes down over here based on our practices and certain things that happen in our times. Like, for example, Nisan is a great time for miracles because of Kriyas Yamsuf and all the great things that happen then. If we have stuff like that, then it's okay. Then it seems to be okay because we're doing it based on our practices. We're going to have to expand on that Rav Avigdor Miller and what he means by that. But that somewhat, Mati, starts to answer your question, right, of how this works. Rav Hirsch explains that everything is forbidden when it comes to superstition and when it comes to magic because it denies God's hashkacha in this world. God is in this world and he can take care of everything. If you believe in superstition, like all of a sudden you step on a crack and you're going to break your mother's back, or like you go ahead and you spill salt, so all of a sudden you got to throw it over, or you walk underneath a ladder, or knock on wood, etc. If you start doing that, it's almost as if the world is automatic and Hashem cannot do anything there. Now, I realize that is strange, because we do feel that there's a way that a Kadosh Baruch Hu runs the world in a natural fashion. But his idea is that when it's beyond the natural, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu seemingly has no control over it, that unlucky things happen, and that's no way. That's a denial of God's free-willed decisions, free-willed ability to make decisions at events. And if there's an influence from, as if there's an influence from these freaked acts and things that are outside of nature, that somehow a Kadosh Baruch Hu cannot get around. That's problematic, yeah.
I feel like an architect and you're like building like a building and you don't want a 13th floor.
The 13th floor. Yeah, the 13th floor. Yeah. That is without a question a non-Jewish concept. And I always wondered, and this is, I don't have that as a sure itself, I've always wondered if the reason why is because we surround ourselves with the number 13, with the word Echad being the gematria of 13, the Avos having the amount of letters as 13, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov is 13, the Imahos, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah being 13 altogether, becoming 13 and 13 is 26 for Shem Havaya, right? I learned that from a cab driver, by the way, in like my second year in Israel, right? But we surround ourselves with the concept of Ahava, of what that means to have, you know, Ahava is also the gematria of 13, and I always wondered if 13 being bad luck symbol by non-Jews is because it seems to be a great symbol by us. I've always wondered that. Now, one could argue that could be by any number. Every number has a mila in Judaism, and that's true. It could be by any number. But Ahava, Echad, the Avos, and the Imahos, somehow there's something connected together with Shem Havaya, etc. I've always wondered if that was there. So yes, I would think that would be a major problem, a major issue. It's not the architect's problem. It's really the people who run the building who are naming it and say, no, we're doing 12 and 14. We're going to go through there, right?
You'll lose money.
Right, right, right. Are people not going to live in that 13th floor? I definitely hear it, right? Should you do that not? That's a shaila that you have to ask. I don't know. I don't know whether that'll be there, but I've always wondered if that was just that. Even Bilam. Mark?
Should you then purposely try to do things that demonstrate that you don't believe in those steps?
So that's we're going to have to see. But yes, at certain times, it's going to have to be yes. There are certain times where 100% a person should show their adversity to doing what that means, that adversity, their aversity to doing these types of practices so they make sure that doesn't happen. I would assume that a person does have to do it. The question is how. Rav Avigdor Miller says, even Bilam noticed this about us. Kilo nichesh b'Yaakov. There's no nichosh in Yaakov. He saw in Parshas Balak, Perachav, Gimel, Pasachav, Gimel. Even in Egypt, we stayed away from their magical practices. There's nowhere where we say the Jews were involved in what the Egyptians were doing at the time. Even though there was magic and stuff going on there, they were involved with this. Rabbi Yisrael Kesten of Vitebsk once visited a man who was known to have strange powers. Strange powers. He wanted to see, and he could see, and he would know the immediate future. So he was going to the Vilna Gaon right after seeing this man. And the guy said, when you go to the Vilna Gaon, you're going to see he's learning a certain Gemara, and he's on a certain daf. He's on a certain daf. So the guy, Rabbi Yisrael Kesson of Vitebsk, he went, saw that the Vilna Gaon was learning exactly that daf and that Gemara when he went there. And he's shocked. He was absolutely shocked. So he told the Vilna Gaon what he had seen. This guy told me exactly what daf you were on. I don't know. He's not known as being this particular big Talmud Chacham, but he knew exactly what daf you were on. How did he know that? The Vilna Gaon said, was there something involved? Was he holding a staff? In some versions of the story, was he holding the staff toward moonlight into the room? And Rabbi Sol said he was. And when he said that, the Vilna Gaon said, this is the lowest form of kishuf that even the kids in Mitzrayim knew about. Even the little children were able to do in Mitzrayim. To be able to do such things, don't worry about it. This guy has no power whatsoever. It's a fake power. You don't have to worry about it. Now, although that's not nichush, and that's not technically ma'onein either, right? Nonetheless, it shows that there is a power to this stuff that's outside of the norm, the outside of the norm that's out there. The Pardes Yosef says, even when there doesn't seem to be anything physical involved, for example, like almost like a Ouija board, there might be a serious issue with getting involved with these types of things. It might be ma'onein, it might be kosim, it might be some other form of kishuf, and therefore we have to be careful. Kilo nichash b'yakov, that's not our type of thing. That's not our thing to do. Yeah. Oh, so then, okay, so I'm still getting there. Do you see a basic pattern behind your questions, though? Like, basically what you're asking, there are certain things that are there, but they're all in Torah. So I'm going to mention a bunch of them, so don't worry. Hold on a second over here. So it's real. I think I'm up to it right now. Is this it? I'm up to it in a little bit. The Miamloe is based on the Nemuki Yosef, Sanhedrin Samach Vav. There's a Nemuki Yosef over there, the Rishon in the back, very late Rishon. These things are only forbidden if there's nothing behind it. If a person understands how to read the constellations in the sky, and there is a chokhmah behind that, and a real chokhmah, it's mentioned in the Gemara. If there is a way where he can tell from the stars, it's not guesswork, patchwork, doing things on his own. He actually understands the chokhmah of astrology, and he understands how those things work and the way the constellations work. If he understands that well, and he sees it clearly, no guesswork, no estimation, he really gets it, then he's allowed to do so and tell people what he sees. He's allowed to do it, since there is a chokhmah behind it. It's forbidden to ask someone who's not an absolute expert in these things, but if they are, you're allowed to. If there's a sick person involved and there's a danger involved, then it may be mutter even then. It may be mutter. The Rambam would ask for it anyway, but it may be mutter, according to some of the Rishonim, if you suspect they have an ability to heal the sick, if it's not a Avodah Zarah. If they're just looking in the skies, being able to see certain things. Rabbi Akiva on Shabbos Kuf Nun Vav, listen to the stargazers. The Kaldoi, the stargazers told him, they told Rabbi Akiva, your daughter is going to die on the day of her wedding. And he was choshesh for it. He was choshesh for it. What happened on the day of her wedding is tzedakah tatzel mimavas. That's what the Gemara brings it down for. She gave tzedakah to a poor man on the day of her wedding and she lived. But he was choshesh for it. He understood. These guys know what they're talking about. Why isn't that nichush or ma'onin? Because they're looking up at the stars and they're seeing something over here. It seems that there was a chokhmah behind it. If you know what you're talking about, you know what you're doing, you're allowed to do it. Rabban Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef was supposed to be Rosh Yeshiva before Rabba. And Rav Yosef was told by the Kaldoi, by the stargazers, he would only be Rosh Yeshiva for a year and a half. So he let Rabba become Rosh Yeshiva before him. He even acted out. Rabbi Akiva didn't do anything about it. Rav Yosef did something for it. He told Rabba to become Rosh Yeshiva. And Rabba was Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years. Then after Rabba died, Rav Yosef became Rosh Yeshiva. I guess he couldn't push it off anymore. And he died a year and a half later. How could he listen to the Kaldoi? Why was that mutter? Why is it mutter to listen to those stargazers? They're called Kaldoi. That's what they're called in the Gemara. The answer is because there is a chachma behind it. There's something. Whether the horoscope that's written in the newspaper is a real deal or not, I highly, highly doubt it. But there is a chokhmah behind it. There's someone, some people out there that may very well know, and those people, it is mutter to be able to listen to. Rav Elish in Gittin Daf Mem Hayam and Aleph was able to listen to the sounds of certain birds, and not him, there was somebody with him, and they heard birds chirping. And from the birds chirping, they realized when they were supposed to escape the jail. They did it. Rav Elish ran away from jail when the bird told them to run away from jail. Not only that, the guy told Rav Elish, a crow just said you should run away. And he said, no, crows lie. And then another bird did it. And he said, okay, now it's time for me to go. Do you understand this? That makes no sense to us. That's pure magic. Why are you allowed to do that? And the answer is, because there is a chachma. If you're a chacham and you know how to use it, mutter, utilize it. Use what it is. That's the idea behind it. The Chidah says this as well, but he does caution you. The Zohar and the Rambam answer everything. They say it's problematic even if you know what you're talking about. Even though we don't necessarily, I don't know how we pass it, I have no idea, but it seems that the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, based on this Rambam, that don't do it, but if a person does it, like if there's a sick person or you need something, then it could be mutter if they know what they're doing, if they know exactly what they're doing. The Ravid, the Radak, the Ravid is very against the Rambam. The Ravid argues with the Rambam in this and says, as long as it's something that's for the future, not about right now, then it could be mutter, etc. And in fact, there are simanim that we clearly allow, based on Chazal, and without a question, the rabbis told us it's permitted. Yerushalmi Shabbos Perek Vav Halacha Test is exactly that. We allow for simanim, right? Even though there's no nichush, simanika. And if there are chazakos involved, if there's a chazaka involved, then you're allowed to do it. For example, a person who's trying to get married is allowed to hang out by wells when people are coming and going, because that's a clear, proven siman. That's the way to get a good shidduch. I don't know, people don't do that anymore, I guess, right? But I guess by water. Well, not by beach. There is a minig not to begin a brand new project, and this is what you're talking about, on a Monday or a Wednesday. To not do a brand new project on Monday or Wednesday. It's brought down. Sefer HaChassidim brings it in his Savos. Not to bring it down during there. There are certain days of the month that you shouldn't move into a new home. Why is that mutter? Why is that not the definition of Ma'onim? Why is that not allowed? What else do we have? Some say that a Masechta should not be started on Rosh Chodesh unless it's part of your Machzer. Don't start a new Masechta on Rosh Chodesh. Not good to start on Rosh Chodesh. That's also weird. Why not? There are many other examples of that. There's so many that we have, right? But it's very difficult to find when it's forbidden and when it's not. So the Yitav Lev, Rav Kuziel Teitelbaum of Seget, he says in his Tshuvas that one should be makbid, should not be makbid about moving in on certain days. Don't be makbid about it. And in fact, I looked it up. The Sefer HaChassidim in his Savah tells you what days you should and shouldn't move into a new home. And I ran into a real problem. Because before I realized it, I knew that the Sefer HaChassidim said it and I totally forgot. And when I moved into our new home, I realized that the day that I was moving in was a date which the Sefer HaChassidim says you shouldn't move into. I realized that's a problem, right? Sefer HaChassidim says it. So I held by the Darchei Tshuva. Darchei Tshuva says in Yoredei HaKufayin and Tes Yodalad that one should be careful about traveling, but moving is a little bit different. But there are so many different opinions on this. So many different opinions. And it's weird, because clearly Nichush has something. So Mizrahi goes on about this idea of Apol Pishein Nichush Yesh Siman, there are Simanim over here. He says, Yaakov Avinu himself did it. Yosef's not here. Shimon's not here. If Binyamin's gone, what am I going to do? Meaning he wouldn't send Binyamin because he saw there's something going on here. He was worried about something and saw there's something there. You see many chachamim going to the kids and saying to the kids, what pasuk? What pasuk are you learning right now? That happens throughout Shas. Mordechai did it. You're talking with many, many people who are going up to that. They considered that to be a form of some form of nevuah. But again, why? Why isn't that Nichush? Why isn't it Nichush over there? Why would it be allowed? The Be'er Baseda talks about it as well. In fact, we have great Gedolim in our nation. Eliezer Eved Avram did Nichush. Eliezer Avram said straight out, and the Gemara calls it Nichush. He said, whoever comes to the well first and I ask them to pour me water, that's the wife for Yitzchak. Why is that allowed? Isn't that a form of Nichush? That's exactly what Nichush is. Yehonah's son went, if they tell me to come closer, then we're going to fight and we're going to win. And if they tell me stay there, then we're not going to win. I got to run back. That's what Yonatan did. That seems to be Nichush. Avishai ben Tsruya did it when David HaMelech was held captive. Avishai ben Tsruya listened to a dove thrashing when he was showering, which is weird in of itself. I was like, that means that David HaMelech must be captured. It's so strange. One after the other, you can find all these cases. Maybe there's ways of answering it, but what's the real answer behind all of it? What's up? Flipping a coin. Clearly, that should be on the bad side, right? Because all of these things, right, seem to be in one way, and that's going in a different direction. So the Gur Aryeh says an amazing thing. Gur Aryeh says an absolute amazing thing. It's the Maral. When you're dealing with a mitzvah, which Eliezer was dealing with the mitzvah of marrying off Yitzchak and Rivka, which Abishai was doing to try to save David HaMelech's wife, which Yehonasan was doing to try to save Klal Yisrael as a whole. When you're dealing with a mitzvah, then anything you do could be considered part of that mitzvah and would be mutter. Even if it's nichush, since your mindset is not on the magic properties involved, but rather Hashem needs me to do something to help him. Since you're doing it for the purpose of doing something kadosh, you're doing it for something that's mutter, says the Gur Aryeh, it would be mutter. That's an unreal chiddush. So is nichush asr? Yeah. But if you have to figure something out, then there are ways of figuring things that are mutter. Do it through a little kid and finding out what pasuk he's learning. Do a Goral Hagra, which many, many Gedolim used by the times of the Holocaust. Go do a Goral Hagra and figure it out by taking a regular Kumish, finding the page, and knowing what to do based on that. These things, they're Nichush? No. When you're doing it with the Torah in mind, when you're doing it when there's a mitzvah involved, for either one of those, something good that's happening, says the Gur Aryeh, then it's mutter. Unbelievable. The Nichush is us are accepting this case. I've always thought, Shaul HaMelech, when the Navi says that he wasn't able to ask the Urim V'Tumim. The Urim V'Tumim wasn't answering for him because the Urim V'Tumim was already with David HaMelech. When he had to find out at the end of his life what to do with the Plishtim that were about to wage war, the Urim V'Tumim wasn't answering. The Urim V'Tumim was with Tzadok and Avyasur or with David HaMelech. He didn't get a dream, and there were no Nevi'im that were answering his questions. So he didn't know what to do. So he went around and he said, I need a Balas Ov. I went to a Balas Ov. Why is that mutter? Why would Shaul HaMelech go? And granted, there are Rishonim that say that this is a major chait on Shaul HaMelech's part. A major chait. You know why he went to a Balas Ov? Because it makes sense. There are ways of doing this better. Now, the Balas Ov was wrong, and I don't want to say it's a mess up on Shaul HaMelech's part. Nichush's mutter in a mutter dick away, says the Gur Aryeh. Maybe Ov and Yidoni are never mutter. Maybe there are certain things that are mutter to do in a mutter dick fashion, and there are certain things that are totally usher and you can never get around. Maybe Ov and Yidoni are so close to Avodah Zarah, they're too far out and you can't do them. But Nichush is not so much. So there are certain superstitions that we can hold of in a mutter dick away. Maybe that's what's going to be. The Malbim says, and somebody said it before, Tzaddikim have a form of Ruach HaKodesh. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to tell them something was obvious. And sometimes it's through the objects that are right there in front of you or something that happens right there in front of you. That makes a ton of sense. Can it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was giving me hints through things right in front of me? Of course. You just got to know how to use that. And great men have the ability to do that, and not just anyone. For me to go ahead, I'm saying as an example, and say, look, this is what happened over there. Therefore, I think HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling me that. That's wrong. That's wrong. Because I don't have the ability to do that. But for a great gadol, a great gaon, to know this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to tell me, I get it from this, then it could be mutter. Even though it's technically nichush. There's nichush that's mutter, and nichush that's aser. That's what the Gur Aryeh and the Malbim are saying. What an unbelievable chiddush. An unbelievable chiddush. The Moshe of Zakenim says straight out, there are other things that we know are mutter. For example, we don't bloodlet on Tuesday. You don't do bloodletting on Tuesday. Why? Because the mazel in charge of Tuesday is Madim. That's Mars. Madim. We already had our whole shiur about Mars and what that means, etc. And that's effective on that day. Panach Raz says this as well. And the Moshe of Zakenim says, the Baal Tosfos, we're talking 13th century Rishon, says the reason why is because, simply put, anything that has to do with refuah, in any way, shape, or form, if it has to do with refuah, it could be allowed. And especially something that's proven to work. There's the famous Rebbe Kiva Eger, it mentions on Shabbos, I believe it's Ayin Zion, in which it says over there, right, that no refuahs that are mentioned in the Gemara are going to work, but one of them is tried, tested, and proven. The one that's tried, tested, and proven is when a person is choking on a chicken bone. Choking on a chicken bone is the only one. The Gemara says you take a chicken bone, you put it on the person's neck, and you say the words, chad, chad, nochis, bola, bola, nochis, chad, chad, and the chicken bone goes straight down. It obviously does not mean in a sakana fashion, you know, you use the Heimlich. We're talking about something where it's stuck in there and you can't get rid of it, right? And it's stuck in a little piece of bone or whatever it is. You take the chicken bone, you put it on his neck, chad, chad, nochis, bola, bola, nochis, chad, chad. Rabbi Kivaker said, you can use it at any point. How is that not a form of nichush in some way, shape, or form? That's the strangest thing in the world, and yet it's mutter, says Rabbi Kivaker. And again, because since you're doing it in this fashion, the way the Gur Aryeh, or the way the Malbim is saying it, in a way that's mutter from the Torah, in which the Torah is involved in it, then it's going to be okay. If Chazal are telling us to be able to do it, then it's okay. Chulin, Tzadi Heyomad Beis, says that Rav checked Safra, Yanuka, and Mavra. He would check Svarim, like the Gur Lagra. He would check children, like you ask the kid what Gemara they're learning at that point. And Mavra used to be boats, a way of checking boats, which we don't understand. Maybe it means some sort of a bridge or something like that. And he would allow it to go through. And all of this, the Gur Lagra as well. You're using Tanakh. You're using something that Kadosh Baruch Hu has brought into the system in order for it to be used that way. The Mordechai at the end of the beginning of Maseches Yuma says there are so many minhagim which can be explained on the basis of psukim and maimare chazal, and that's why we're allowed to do them. And he gives examples. This is the Mordechai. The Mordechai is a late Rishon as well. We're talking about 1400s. The Mordechai says, 1300s, I'm sorry, eating the heads of lamb and fish on Rosh Hashanah. Why do we do that? So we're the head, Shiyah L'Rosh V'lo L'Zanav. Should be a head and not a tail. Why is that mutter? Why is that mutter? It's the same idea. It's nichush. And so we're doing a superstitious practice to be able to make ourselves better in some way? Well, what does that mean? And all of the simanim are like that. Eating honey, the different fruits and vegetables that you do as simanim. Why is that much? Or says the Mordechai, since they're based on Maamari Chazal, since they're based on Psukim, then they're there. You know, I always said, you can, according to the Mishnah Berurah, you're allowed to make up your own simanim in your own language. But I ate a shaila based on this. How can you do that? Like, people have raisins and celery, so you have a raisin salary, right? People do that. But why is that mutter? If it's based on something that's a Maimer Chazal or a Pusik, then it's mutter to do. But if you just make it up on your own, why is that mutter? It's a strange thing altogether to think about, because again, it has to be based on something that's real. He goes on, he says, so to kaparos, using chickens by the Aseres Mechuva, looking at one's nails during Havdalah, washing one's eyes with the wine of Havdalah. I don't know if anybody does that, puts the wine inside their eyes or right above their eyes, etc. And so many more, those minhagim that are there, which seem to be based on something legitimate, based on a Maimer Chazal, something that we have in the Torah itself, or a Pusik or whatever like that, that you can do. But if it's not based on a Torah source, says the Mordechai, cannot be done. I think those answer a lot of the shilas that you might have. When you're looking at a superstitious practice, obviously do not do anything and don't compare and don't say, well, if we allow this, then we can allow that. That we can't do. We can't add on to the practices that we have. But if there's a practice that we have and we look at it, we're like, why is that not superstitious? It's mutter. Because according to the Gur Aryeh, we're doing it for a mitzvah. According to the Malbim, there's a Ruach HaKodesh a bit, and something involved. You're doing it for the Torah itself. According to the Moshe of Zakenim, it's for Refuah. And Refuah, we always allow these types of things, as long as it's not a Avodah Zarah. And says the Mordechai, because it's based on my Mare Chazal or Psukim. Those are great answers. Great answers as to what explains. But I would be hesitant to say, so now we'll matter something else. I would be hesitant to do that. Yeah, Dave.
But we see that in the Torah that it happens. I mean, Emmaus, for example, Rivka going to those priests to figure out what was going on.
Well, shame. She went to shame.
She went to shame. I'm saying we have that. We have
Lidrosh. You know what? Even then, that's already from Rashi. Lidrosh es Hashem is the wording. So that could even be, again, we know what the Maamar Chazal is and we know what the Rishonim say, but literally it could mean she just davened. You know what I'm saying? That's what it could be. And she got a nevuah. It could be that way. So it's not a riot. Yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, that's a very good call. With the Judaim, how did the Judaim work? Clearly, they were relying on something. Maybe there was a match. Again, that could be healing, a refuah purpose, refuah practice that they allowed, and therefore, even though it was only nichush some way, they allowed it.
So, yeah. So I guess the question I was getting at is, you know, right? Like, so how much of it is actual? How much of it is like placebo?
I definitely cannot tell you. I will only tell you the definition thereof. If you have the Gur Aryeh, the Malbim, Moshe, the Kenyan, Mordechai, you can do it. And if you don't do it. Don't do it. That's what I would tell you when it comes to anything like that. I'd be very scared. Like if somebody came up to me now and said, should I take mandrakes and put it in my room? I'd be scared of that. But if somebody says, they say that a ruby is... I'm sorry? Yes. You know what? You're right. Maybe it would be. I still would be scared because mandrakes scare me. Right? But it's the Harry Potter thing in me. But like there's, you know, that does get something. But if somebody tells me a ruby is used in order to ease childbirth, well, that's already a Rabbeinu Bechaya based on the Maimari Chazal that are there, based on the medrash that the Rabbeinu Bechaya had, then I'd say, okay, you should have a ruby for childbirth, for an easy labor or something like that. That's brought down. Rabbeinu Bechaya says in a Parshat Tzava. It's an interesting one.
Where does the ruby go?
No, just to have it in the room. Oh. Just have it in the room. There's a ruby gemach in there. So hold it the whole time in front. No, that's not happening. Anyway, I don't want to go through the whole thing right now. I'm just, I will tell you, the Shach says, I don't have that much time. I'm just going to run through this. The Shach says the punishment for people that get into these types of things and treat them as if they're absolutely real and believe everything that the practices say, etc., will not have rest in his grave after death. His bones turn into snakes and worms. Snakes and worms that will then go and damage other people, and they'll be in great pain. Obviously, let's learn from the Shorsh, the word Nechashim, Nichush, etc. That's going to be from Nechashim itself. It explains to me a strange Gemara in Bava Kama, Tesayinim, and Aleph. The Gemara in Bava Kama, Tesayinim, and Aleph says that when a person dies, he doesn't have Hakaras HaTov, he doesn't say Modim, then the spine turns into a snake. It's based on this. I think they're doing something else entirely. I will tell you for sure, the Rambam says none of this stuff is real. The Rambam says all over the place. There's three different places that you can name off the top of your head. In Mori Nevuchim, he mentions in the Yad HaChazaka and the Perish Mishnais and Avodah Zarah Perek Vav. He goes through and he says, none of this stuff works. Nothing's real here. Everything here is a fake. that it's all chizas seinayim, right? Things, whatever it is. And the reason why the Torah answers all the different ones is because don't get involved in this stuff. Don't get involved with it. Don't be involved in it whatsoever, and it's all not real. And the Torah forbade them because there are strange practices that have absolutely nothing, and it makes people into fools. They get ensnared in it. They think it's real. They convince themselves it's real, and it's not real at all. Says the Rambam, don't get involved in it whatsoever. And he says straight out, there's no such thing. There's no such thing at all in those three different places. So the Vilna Gaon writes in Yoredeh Kufayin Tes Yud Gimel, Simon Kufayin Tes Sif Yud Gimel, for some pretty strong words against the Rambam. If you want to look it up yourself, Yoredeh Kufayin Tes Yud Gimel, it's in the Bir Agra. He says there is no doubt in his mind that the Rambam was influenced by philosophy. And the philosophers that he talked to, and his love for Aristotle, he said there's no doubt in his mind. Most of the Achronim argued on everything the Rambam says, since the Gemara itself mentions many of the things the Rambam says never existed. How could it be that the Gemara would mention it? He says there is a pshat here, and there's a panemius. Not the panemius that the Rambam thinks, but a panemius shebe panemius. Another thing that's all the way in there, right, that's something else entirely that can be learned from this. You should know, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Katzenallenbogen, who's one of the foremost, one of the writers, when you look at who the Vilna Gaon, Rav Katzenallenbogen was one of those, you might recognize the name from one of the streets in Harnof, but Rav Tzvi Hirsch Katzenallenbogen was one of the Talmidei Talmidim of the Gra, who usually said, his word is verified. So he said these words never came from the Vilna Gaon himself. He never said it. The Vilna Gaon never said it. They were added on by someone who was printing the Gaon's writings, and it's not like it. And the truth is, it's unlike the Gaon, because in many different places, the Gro will add on, but just a few words. Here he writes a whole thing. It's just very rare for the Vilna Gaon to do that. Here he did it. It's weird. But Rav Shmuel Luria wrote a sefer called Alios Eliyahu, and he said he saw these words in a ksav yad from the Gro himself on the Shulchan Aruch, and therefore he has no doubt that they're absolutely true. That's how it's said from the Rav Shmuel Luria and the Alios Eliyahu. So whether or not it is there, either way, it's an interesting thing to go through. Does this have any practical application? It does. Whether Achiza Seinayim is an Isser Dio Reis or not, whether a magician is an actual Isser Dio Reis or not. The Rambam holds that Achiza Seinayim and fooling people would be a Dio Reis, while the other Rishonim would seemingly say that Achiza Seinayim is, maybe it's a Drabanim, maybe it's another type of practice. Would he be allowed to have a non-Jew do it as well? What's considered Kishuf by non-Jews? There's a lot to talk about with all this, and this is not the time for that. But the basic idea behind this is that we have these three psu, the Loso one has to be very careful with how they treat these different psukim, what to do every single time over here. There's so much here to go through. One has to be very careful with the practices, those minhagim that we have, to make sure they're based on something real or they're for one of the purposes that we mentioned up above. And if not, stay away from them. Those are superstitious. That's basic. That's what I'm referring to. That's what I'm referring to. The school, all this. It would have to be based on a real practice. Yeah. If it's based on something real, good. And if it's not based on something real, don't do it. All right, we'll stop with that, everybody. Have a great shout.